Action Park Media.
Let's get a mic check here. 1, 2, 1, 2. Episode 85. No gruffs given. It's hatred. It's the only thing that lasts. Mickey Rourke, a.k.a. Henry Barfly. Episode 85. No gruffs given. So, can you believe we're still talking about this? Honestly. Like, I just want to go on the record and say, I wish that I could talk about something else. I wish that we could, for the thousandth time, just go back to normal. That our news cycle wasn't completely dominated by this aggressive fighting, this nastiness. We should be living our best lives right now. We should all be healthy. We should be interacting with each other. We should be living. We should be fucking prospering, not 2 years in, fighting, avoiding having to answer questions. You know, we have two sides right now. We have one side and we have the other side. And anything in the middle is wrong. And it's just crazy to think that, and I'll say it again, but, you know, 6 months ago, if you had said anything about this lab leak theory for COVID-19 from Wuhan, you were considered a conspiracy theorist. You were considered a Trumper. You were considered a monster. And now everyone, or a big percentage of the population, has come around to the fact that that's probably what happened. Same thing with Governor Cuomo. I said it last week, or a couple of days ago. You know, everyone loved Governor Cuomo, and now everyone says Governor Cuomo's a monster, except for Joe Biden. Joe Biden, he just can't help himself. You know, they've asked him the question, and they've asked him, well, now, they originally asked the question if the president, they asked the president to say what type of a job Governor Cuomo did on infrastructure. And, you know, there was this whole back and forth about, well, how do we separate? I'm going to answer the question, but I'm going to separate his personal life. Well, you can't fucking answer that question. If somebody asks you how Governor Cuomo did on infrastructure, you know what you say? Based on the recent events, based on the report that came out on Governor Cuomo, I don't want to comment on anything Governor Cuomo's done. That's what you're supposed to say. So everybody that wants to, you know, like, why the fuck did Biden, President Biden, why didn't he just answer it the way it should have been answered? Like, that's the way you should have answered that. You can't say, well, outside of his personal life, he did a hell of a job on infrastructure. Well, that might be true. I'm not here to argue whether it is or it isn't. I don't know. But don't answer that question. So we're upside down. What I do want to do, what I would like to do, okay? Because I interviewed an old friend, Liz Goldwyn. Liz is, she has this platform, okay, called the Sex Ed, thesexed.com. I want to run Liz's interview before I do all my other stuff, because I don't want to, I think that what I talk to Liz about is separate from what we're, the daily news cycle and all that shit, okay? And the reason that I wanted to talk to Liz is because we are on the Look Good, Feel Good program, right? We're always trying to better ourselves, man or woman. And to do that, we have to take in information, different information. So this is a little bit of a curveball for me. I don't talk about this stuff, but I think it's important for us, all right? Because we're trying to arm ourselves and make ourselves the best version of us that we can be. And to do that, we gotta pull information from all these different places. So I wanna run it Liz's interview first. We have a great conversation. It's like 40 minutes long and it's interesting. And you know, vulnerability is a big thing. And we know that we've talked about that on the past. It's okay to be vulnerable. The more vulnerable you are, the more powerful you are. Again, men and women. And just before we run Liz's interview, I want to do something that, you know, I'm pretty loyal to my advertisers. I got to tell you. But ultimately, my loyalty has to fall with you, my listeners, because you are the ones that buy some of the products that I advertise on the show, because that pays the bills. You know, I'm not in this to do it for free. I mean, I'm a capitalist. I like to make money. But ultimately, I'm always going to back you, the listener. So Pretty Litter. Pretty Litter is kitty litter reinvented. It's unlike traditional litter. All right. Pretty Litter has super light crystals that trap odor and release moisture, resulting in dry, low maintenance litter that doesn't smell. It's the type of litter that I want. If I had a cat, I've done a little bit of research in this. Pretty Litter is made to be safe for your cat and you. It's made from ultra-absorbent materials, and it's virtually dust-free. Pretty Litter arrives at your door in a small, lightweight bag that lasts an entire month. That means no more inconvenient trips to the store. You've got your Pretty Litter. It's just the world's smartest litter, and you're good to go. So you're going to go to prettylitter.com, use the promo code Sean for 20% off your first order. That's prettylitter.com, promo code Sean, 20% off. Now, episode 85, No Gruffs Given. Liz Goldwyn, am I saying that right?
You are.
Mazel tov.
How's it going?
It's going,
been a minute.
It's been a minute. Where are you? Are you in California or New York?
I'm in California right now, looking at the ocean, actually. So
you're kind of like an OG California and New Yorker, a little bit of both, right?
Yeah. And you can throw Europe in that mix too.
Right.
I spent a lot of time working there, but yeah, I mean, I'm from LA. I'm one of the few people that actually, my grandfather came there in 1914. So,
and
I'm born and bred Cali girl, but
yeah, I wasn't going to mention it because I feel like, or if it came up naturally, but your grandfather, you come from a pretty interesting lineage. And I did not know that your grandfather was an immigrant. Are you talking about you have two grandfathers though, right?
You're talking about my paternal, well, both my grandfather, my paternal grandfather, who I think you're talking about, Sam Goldwyn, was an immigrant, left the Warsaw ghetto when he was like 12 or 13, walked across British Columbia, I think at like 16, that's where he entered into the U.S., was a glove maker, like very sort of American dream story, like spoke Yiddish as his first language and went on to make the first movie in Hollywood. It might be 1913, actually, that the movie was made, called The Squaw Man, with his partners Cecil B. DeMille and Jesse Lasky.
Wow.
And then he went on to found a bunch of studios, but MGM, which people always mistakenly call me or my family like the heirs to MGM, which is not true. They stole his logo, and which was the lion. Goldwyn Pictures, that was the logo, the lion roaring, and then they named the actual studio that he founded and they bought, Metro Pictures did, after him.
Wow.
And they took him to court to try to get him to stop using his own name, in fact, and he won. But
was he alive? Like, did you meet him? Were you part?
No, he died before I was born.
Right.
But most of my family's in the movie business. Not that I want like this podcast or, you know, my work to be defined by the great alpha men that came before me.
No, but I think it's, but I think it's interesting that, you know, it's funny, like in sports, and we're seeing it now quite a bit where, fathers, you know, guys that have children there's a lot of players that have kids that are now becoming players, right? And it's, you know, I think you can flip the coin, like kids that come from families that are successful can go in one direction and some go in the other. And I think that the fact that you went in the other, it says a lot. I mean, it's true. And you've made films. So it's part of your DNA, right?
No, for sure. It's part of my DNA. I think maybe more than anything, my grandfather being a risk taker and doing something like against all odds. And he was a gambler too. Like a lot of those big guys back in those days were huge gamblers. They would actually gamble movie stars too, back when the stars were controlled by studio systems. So he won Marlon Brando in a bet for Guys and Dolls, which was a movie he made. He won Marlon Brando in a bet. So they were big gamblers. So I feel like that part of like risk taking, I definitely have, and like doing things that are outside of the box. Cause at that time, you know, he made gloves. Like right. He didn't know there was no movie business and he didn't know anything about it.
Did you, when you grew up, like, let's say your teenage years in Los Angeles, was it a less than zero type of scene, or what was the vibe?
Well, I got sent to boarding school when I was 13 on the East Coast. Oh, no, it was not less than zero at all. My dad was really like, you're going to know the value. Me and my younger brother recycled for our allowance from the time we were like 7 or 8. He was really strict about about knowing our place and our privilege, right, and knowing what came with that. So community service was big. And then, you know, I fell in love for the first time at 13, and the boy that I was madly in love with introduced me to cannabis, and he had like a bootleg mixtape of The Chronic that hadn't come out yet.
Yeah.
So I was into like sort of the art school bad boys, and all my friends were pro skaters growing up. So it was definitely not like hanging out in a Hollywood scene at all.
Right. Do you think that from that age of 13, when you first fell in love, what became of love to you, and like, where is it today? Cause I think what I want to talk to you about, and obviously we're going to get into it, but I've got a lot of guys that listen to this show. And I think that not only is the world in a crazy place right now, but because of technology, relationships, and everything is fucking just turned upside down. When you fell in love for the first time at 13, do you think you love differently, or you've always loved?
Oh, well, I'm actually writing a new book that comes out next year called Sex, Health, and Consciousness. And I just finished a chapter called What is Love? Mm-hmm. Talking all about that.
Right.
So, you know, I'm going to get to that in a second, but what I want to address what you're saying about men and maybe your listeners is that I'm so glad you're doing this and speaking about this, because, you know, I feel like, especially in the wake of, you know, Time's Up, Me yeah. Too, cancel culture, and this idea of toxic masculinity that gets thrown around, I don't think we're creating enough spaces for men to redefine for themselves what masculinity is, yeah, to feel nurtured and supported.
Yeah.
And I think that men have been, and especially straight men, have been really kept in boxes for a long time. And you've been told, especially as an athlete, buck up, yeah, be a man, don't cry. You know, man up. What the fuck did those even mean? Like, we're expecting men to like fit this very narrow, you know, idea of what masculinity is. And I think it's time to change the paradigm. And also, I think I have so many men that come to me privately asking questions because they're afraid to do it aloud. Yeah. They're afraid to get canceled. And I don't think that does anyone a service. Like, I don't want to lift some people up and leave others behind. I think we've got to change the whole paradigm and evolve together.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what we're struggling with, right? And we talk about this a lot. Like I say to my guys, like, being vulnerable is cool. I mean, you know, I don't think it was ever labeled as not cool, but maybe there were other nuances of being masculine that were sort of bubbling to the surface that were considered cooler. But being vulnerable is the coolest thing you can do. And asking questions is sort of attractive, I think, for women. But, you know, we've lost that. So
I think being vulnerable is one of the greatest strengths,
right,
that you can have, regardless of, of your gender. And I think that we need to support that. I mean, you would not believe how many straight women who are in committed relationships with straight men that I have to remind that men have feelings.
Right.
Because they literally, like, we're just given this idea of like, oh, men can handle anything. Men don't have feelings. There, men, I feel like, especially now, are carrying around so much pain, so many scars. They have so much healing to do from just like, you know, going, they have never, you don't have spaces where it's like allowed for men to come together and talk the way that women do, right, openly.
Right.
About things. It's like a constant like peer pressure to, and you also have all this expectation around performance that's, and virility that's linked to masculinity. That's like so demeaning for men.
Yeah. I mean, I usually every show I have a erectile dysfunction ad that I read, you know, like I think. And that's sort of a whole other thing of like, well, what is erectile dysfunction? I mean, I'm sure there's men that are born with it, but I'm also sure that there's men that think they have it because maybe they're in a relationship where they're not comfortable expressing themselves.
Well, and I think that here, so we have on our site, thesexed.com, we have really good essays on erectile dysfunction and ejaculatory disorder, which are actually two different things. And I don't think that there's, again, enough attention being paid to like, how do you handle that with your partner when you're in that situation? You don't shame them. And the other interesting thing about erectile dysfunction and ejaculatory disorder is that we can directly trace the extreme rise in both of these things in men over the age of, it's now 17, by the way, to the rise of streaming porn.
So explain that to me, because I the porn thing I wanted to talk about and how I think it's terrible and it fucking really desensitizes you, but explain that to me a little bit.
Okay, so here's, I'm not going to say that pornography is evil, because we actually have a lot of like adult stars on our podcast and are inclusive of them. I think it's like trying to put something back in the box that can't go back in the box. What I think we need are the tools to interpret it and to explain not only to ourselves, but to children that it's not real, just like Hollywood's not real. You know, just like we're sold a bill of goods from Hollywood about what it means to be a man and what love means and this bullshit about happily ever after that, like, especially young girls are, you know, given this like Disney myth,
right,
of like love and romance. So like porn has, well, I mean, you can kind of look at it like AD, like the collective ADD that we have, right? Like we're scrolling through Instagram. You're not really taking in, you can like something. It's not really processing it. And porn has become the same thing. So when you train your mind to be aroused with this like hyperstimulation,
mm-hmm. I see.
You lose, like, I think people should change up the way they masturbate. So if you're looking at porn all the time, you need to like go find some old Playboy magazine or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, or, you know, use your imagination or listen to erotica or masturbate without the goal of an orgasm.
Right.
Like literally just stroke without the goal of orgasm. Cause you know, porn also teaches us to have these, not only these expectations of size, okay, the average penis length is nowhere near what you see in porn.
Right.
It's just, but imagine, like, I feel like that, God, that's so much pressure.
Yeah.
To like grow up thinking that that's what you're supposed to look like. We had, we have a podcast with Lexington Steele. Do you know who he is?
Yeah, I know the name.
So Lexington Steele is a huge, huge porn star. He's in his 40s now. Really interesting guy. But he talks a lot in the podcast about like performance anxiety and how basically like if you're a NASCAR driver or you're a pro hockey player, right?
Mm-hmm.
You don't, like, the average person watching hockey or watching NASCAR doesn't think that they can go skate like that or drive a car like that.
Right.
But for some reason with porn, we have this expectation that like that's supposed to be reality.
Right. Right.
And it totally screws us up.
Yeah. The thing that I think, there's no foreplay in porn, right? Which I think, and what I'm trying to say to guys today, like embrace foreplay. And I don't mean like even just a physical foreplay, but the idea of walking up to a woman or making eye contact with a woman and then feeling pheromones and feeling that vibe and then finding the right time to approach her. Maybe she's with friends or, and for the sake of our conversation, we're going to use, like he and she, okay. I'm not going to just to simplify it. Right. I think that whole thing with porn, it's lost. You know what I mean? That old art form of like, whatever.
Courting.
Yeah. Courting. Courting. Yes.
Courting. And chivalry.
Yeah.
I'm a very old fashioned person personally. So like, I love courting and chivalry. Well, there's an interesting thing that we like to call the 20/20 rule that can just tell you a little bit. And again, I'm, you know, to use what you said, I'm talking about straight couples here.
Yeah.
Men and women.
Yeah.
That it, in general, if we're talking about like arousal state, it generally takes about 20 seconds for a man to become sexually aroused. For a woman, it takes 20 minutes.
Right. Well, there you
to
go.
Achieve that. So there you have that disconnect right there. You also have this thing where like, I get so many women who will be really pissed because they're out to lunch or whatever. They're out with their man and their man will just like, you know, his eyes will go past because he sees, you know, someone attractive and he's forgotten about it 20 seconds later.
Right.
Whereas the woman will sit there and stew and it's just a biological function.
So that is a good point. Now, let me ask you this. And I'm going to go on the record now to say that any relationship that I've ever been in, I have been cognizant of that male temptation to look at a pretty woman that walks by when I'm in the presence of the woman that I love. Right. And I think I'm not going to shame myself that somebody that was attractive walked by and my senses went up, but it's a natural thing. But you have to have like some fucking couth and respect. Like you have to be able to control yourself. And I think that all of this in a ball is this secret potion of like how men get their mojo back and how they do feel comfortable and understand boundaries. And it's all kind of in the same bucket. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to circle back to your question about love in a second. But what I want to point out to you, what you just said is that although me personally, I'm like super like 1950s in my personal life, and extremely monogamous. Monogamy is a choice. It's not a natural human state. We are not wired as humans to be monogamous.
Right.
So you're constantly resisting that urge. You know, if you make that commitment, here's why I really have a problem with cheating is like, we should be able to talk about this. You should be able, like if we're going to talk about love and commitment, that requires a lot of honesty, a lot of working on yourself, the other person working on themselves. And you should be able to have a conversation with your partner about what the construct of your relationship is. And maybe your relationship is not monogamous. Whatever works for the both of you that's really clearly stated with boundaries is great. As long as you're happy, as long as it's with consent, great. But, you know, just be aware that you're constantly fighting that urge,
but don't,
you know, to stray.
And don't you think that part of that conversation sometimes needs to be like, I think cheating happens because in my opinion, as I'm older now and married and like in a relationship where I couldn't even imagine, like I don't even think about being with someone else sexually because my wife knows, like we click in that regard, right? I think a lot of couples and maybe younger couples, maybe there's that disconnect because they don't talk about what they like or what turns them on, or because they're young.
They don't talk about it, but they also maybe don't know and haven't spent that time exploring for themselves. But the big thing is that they don't talk about it. I would say, you know, we get like hundreds of DMs and emails every day through the sex ed, through our Instagram, through the website. I get it personally all day long. And you know, a lot of the questions I get, the answers come down to some form of like know yourself, explore yourself, communicate. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of fear and shame around like really being honest
right.
with what you like and what you don't like. And, you know, I think in a committed partnership too, it's kind of like you don't get to be a pro athlete without putting in the hours training.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And people forget when you're in a relationship, it's this Disney idea of like, oh, happily ever after.
Right.
Or like when people get married, it's like no one really tells you, okay, now the work begins.
Yeah.
And I tell people like if they're also this idea of in love, like the in love I felt at 13 was marked by obsession and anxiety. And it's like being on drugs, right?
Yeah.
But that state of limerence or that like lustful in love feeling, chemically, it only lasts from 1 to 4 years maximum. After that is where like real love begins, which is about more than just that, like, those feelings that we crave.
And so that 1 to 4 years, is that, does that start at a certain age or is that just
period? Like you fall in love with someone,
right.
You get those feelings
right.
and that like heightened state,
And
there's been a lot of, I'm writing about all this in my book, but yeah, there's a lot of research done on the similarities between like cocaine addiction,
right.
And love. And being in love, are you like that? You know, love is a drug, right? So once you get beyond that, like people just expect that the chemistry and passion and like sexual relation that they have with someone at the beginning of a relationship is going to sustain,
right?
And they dial it in. So a lot of times I'm like, you know what? You got to send an iCal reminder to make out, you know, or whatever it is. You've got to build it in.
Right.
The way you do your exercise, like the way you're disciplined about your exercise or whatever it is that like keeps you feeling mentally and physically strong.
Yeah.
You need to put that attention on sex. And it just tends to think, I think a lot of people think that just sex just happens and it's like mysterious. And if you talk about it and examine it, it takes that like mystery away.
Well, yeah. And one of the other things, like, you know, another movie thing where it's like, oh, we have sex like 8 times a day or like that theory to me always seemed fucking not real. Like who wants to have sex 8 times a day? Like, like, you know what I mean? Like, I think that there's a pressure sometimes associated on relationships to be over sexual when, you know, you don't necessarily need to be over sexual to be happy or.
Yeah. But where does that pressure come from? It comes from other people.
Right.
It comes from like other people, like us getting like our validation or that what we're doing is right. Or that we're sexy enough or whatever from what other people think. And what other people think is none of our business. There's a really good movie. If your listeners haven't heard it, that Joseph Gordon-Levitt made, that I wish got seen more. And I think you would like it. It's called Don Juan.
Yeah, of course.
And it's about, it's a great movie and he wrote it, directed it and starred in it like maybe 2005.
Yeah.
Or
it was
about
it was a while
porn.
Ago.
Yeah. About like asking a lot of these questions. And I haven't seen a lot of other straight guys, like, you know, publicly come out that are in the public eye, like publicly come out and, you know, talk about these things. Which makes it normal for other people to like know that they're the other main question that we get all the time, every day is some version of, am I normal? There's so many people on the planet walking around and feeling like whatever they're struggling with like sex or their body or love or relationships or that they're the only person experiencing that. And
right.
I guarantee you, I have heard it all
right.
and more than once.
Right. You should be, just on a side note, I've been thinking like there's a big opportunity business-wise for, you see all these on-set coordinators now for like love scenes and stuff. You would be a very good one.
Intimacy coordinator.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I've got so much to do.
I know.
I don't think that's my role, but there's really good. I love that show High Maintenance.
Yeah.
You ever watch that show?
Yeah.
I was just watching that episode with the intimacy coordinator in the episode, gets into a thing with a guy who's
right.
Asexual.
Yeah. No, but I feel like you have this nice, calming, like open energy where you'd be very good at it and probably be a good payday, a quick payday every once in a while. Anyways.
Well, I'm trying to do that on a bigger level with, you know, the work that we're doing through the Sex Ed and the like other things we have coming out, you know, through that platform, like books and media and podcasts. Cause, you know, I feel like that's really lacking is, you know, this safe space where there is a lack of judgment and it is really welcoming to all because I want people to have, I believe that information and education is power. And I want people, all people, and I especially want men. I want you to have love. I want you to experience love. Right. I want you to experience great sex. I want you to experience connected sex.
Tell me what connected sex is.
Well, I think that connected sex is, you know, a big through line of what I believe about sex and what I'm outlaying in this book is the interplay between sex, health, and consciousness. So it's like mind, body, spirit. So if you, so like we sort of disassociate our genitals or our sexuality from who we are holistically. And that means that we're only tapped into like 5% of the pleasure and like a consciousness expanding potential of sex. Sex and sexual energy is actually life force energy, or to get kind of new age here, it's your prana, it's your chi. You know this, right? Because you're an athlete, like about training or like holding on to your, maybe not having sex before, of course. Like a big game.
Yeah.
So traditionally it goes back like to, you know, thousands and thousands of years ago, they believed, especially male sperm and ejaculation. Like if you read the Tao of Sex, like Chinese philosophy, they believe that you lose some of your life force through ejaculating, right? That's like sort of the basis of some of the tantric methods, mm-hmm. is that you come to that place where you're almost going to ejaculate. So if you think about like if you start to reframe your sexual energy as more than just like either are you jerking off or are you fucking someone that is done,
yep.
it's actually something that you can channel towards your personal power, towards your goals, towards your performance, like in life,
right.
Creatively. They say apparently like, you know, many people, not just athletes, but creative people, including supposedly Shakespeare, we know he had prolific output.
Yeah.
Would refrain from having sex when he was like trying to finish a sonnet. So there's something to be said to reframing how we look at sex and how we look at that energy. So I say sex, health, and consciousness, it's like, okay, if you have a meditation practice, you know, or, you know, maybe you can kind of start to get into what I'm saying here.
No, so like when I'm thinking about this, I'm thinking about this, like, okay, let's think of a young Sean, right? Like a 21 year old Sean who's on the verge of, you know, who has an opportunity, right? And if I went mm-hmm. back in time and said, how would I have maximized myself at that point? I would have taken what we're talking about right now and just tapped into it more. And understood, like, here is my energy source. Here's what gets me excited. Here's where I can put more energy into and how I can, you know, maybe understanding the relationship with women will make me more powerful. Like from an actual, like build my power up and I'll be more energized versus, does this make sense? Like how I'm kind of channeling
it? But take away the thing about your relationship with women and even thinking about it in terms like just with yourself.
Right.
Yeah, just with yourself or
right.
For sure. And then once you start if you grasp that as like the founding premise, then you can take things from other areas. Like for example, do you know who Wim Hof is?
The Iceman. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yes.
So he's got those breathing techniques.
Yep.
So if you start to get into breath work, that can be translated into your sexual practice and can also really expand and enhance your orgasm and your partner's orgasm. The same way that if you've practiced any of his techniques or any breath work, you kind of feel like out of body. right? Or high.
Yeah.
You feel like you're in an altered state.
Totally.
I think that most people aren't reaching those altered states through sex because one, they're not connected to themselves. Two, they're not really connecting to their partner. And three, that requires like both parties to be in that space.
Right.
And so that's when I say like more connected sex, that would be like going towards that place.
Right. Like, and that's what's interesting is, so if I look back at 21-year-old Sean and I say like, put more emphasis on all of these areas. And if I just carve out the sex area, like, I don't want to say like, yeah, it's be more nurturing, put more value into it, where it's not just a thing. Like you said the word fucking earlier, when you hear a woman say the word fucking, it's like, yeah, what is fucking is fucking, right? Versus, you know, because I feel like you become more powerful if you do it the right way. Like you're now becoming more well-rounded and you're not such a fucking savage. You're not such a, you know, you don't just chase it and like you feel this energy and you just run towards it instead of just being patient. Let it come to you. You know what I mean? And then.
Yeah. Well, I don't think we want to be careful with saying like right or wrong, right? Again, right. unless we're doing things without consent,
right,
and people are not of age.
Right.
I think we don't want to put that like pressure on ourselves or someone else. And patience is fucking hard.
Yeah.
And sometimes you could be the most like yogi zen person and a good fuck is what you need for
right.
that situation. It doesn't like one doesn't negate the other. It's kind of just like if you're given, you know, a Crayola box and you have 12 colors and then you're given a Crayola box and you have like 62 colors, you have more opportunity. You know, you have more, it's just like adding more tools to
right.
your toolbox,
right.
like opening up your mind to the other possibilities that like sex is this thing that's presented and we tend to look at in this one way that's super related to porn and this and that. And we're not even at the like precipice of what it could be.
Right. Right. From like an ancient standpoint or from like a tantra style sort of connection.
From an ancient standpoint, from a spiritual connection, imagine the way that like most of us learn about sex, like our earliest memories, a lot of it is tied to our religious or cultural upbringing. And in many religious texts, actually from lots of different religions, it's the dogma that got in the way, but the ancient texts are not necessarily shaming sex or saying that it should only be used for procreation outside of probably Catholicism.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people carry around a lot of baggage from those early experiences of how they learned about sex.
Right.
You know, like I know lots of men that have a lot of shame around things like around talking about sex with a partner around because they,
yeah.
It's so primal. Like, so it goes back to those early memories of being told like masturbating is wrong. Don't do that. Don't touch yourself. You know, these thoughts are dirty or impure.
Right.
And so we like associate all this like dirtiness with sex too, with something that's totally natural.
Right. How do you, okay, this is one thing that I'm trying to wrap my head around and I get asked about like the connection and the way that you, meet people now from a physical standpoint where maybe you're going into it like I'm looking for love. It's totally changed, right? Because of phones and apps and all kinds of shit. Like, what has that done to the process? And do you feel like if you're wise, you don't get sucked into that world? Or can you manipulate that world and still do it with a way that is healthy? Because I don't necessarily think it's the most healthiest way to meet somebody, like through a phone.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a lot of false sense of intimacy. I think that intimacy is something that most people struggle with, real intimacy. And they use, I think we all, you know, can maybe relate to this, like using sex as a way to avoid intimacy. And I think that a lot of, you know, our, not even at, like, just take even social media. Like, it's a super false sense of intimacy that you have with someone that you don't really know IRL
right.
in real life.
Right.
And dating, like, I see it a lot with women get involved in these, like, multi-layered, like, weeks long texting with someone.
Yeah.
And it's not real.
Right.
You know, it's not real at all. So, right. I mean, I don't know, like, I've never used a dating app, so, but I love going on my friends.
Yeah, and,
like,
me too.
Doing their profiles for them.
Yeah.
I think it's really entertaining. You know, I think it would be great if people looked up from their phones.
Yeah.
And, like, worked on themselves, and maybe, like, if you're, whatever you're really, your interests are, you start doing that in real life and, like, noticing who's around, like, looking at people in the eye, not being on your phone when you're in the checkout line, because, I mean, maybe I'm super old fashioned.
No. I think that this is what you're saying is a calling that we need to find. You know what I mean? Because think about these guys, like, guys now that have gone through this whole Me Too thing and are fucking gun shy, right?
Yeah.
You know, they're like, they don't know what to do. They don't know. They've forgot that being a gentleman and being chivalrous and just following the old fashioned rules is actually sexy and it's safe. And you're not like, it's not dead. You're not a criminal if you do it that way. You know what I mean?
No, I don't think you are, but I also think that it takes educating the women that you're speaking with, because a lot of women, and I can say in the past myself too, will be like, well, why isn't he making a move, you know, or why isn't he doing this? I get that all the time.
Right.
Then again, that goes back to the expectation that men have to be these, like, pounce on you
right.
creatures to be, like, virile and sexy, which is not the case. So we all need a lot of reframing around this stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I live for romance and chivalry. I think it's beautiful to have the door. And that doesn't make me less of a feminist or, you know, independent woman.
No.
I do that shit all day long in my work. Like, for me personally, I really like to I know it is, again, like, maybe it's anti-feminist, who knows, but I like to play that role
right.
in my personal life. Like, I don't want to have to lead all the time.
Yeah. I was, I don't know. It's a weird thing. Like, I grew up in a time where, from an athlete standpoint, we were pre-Twitter, pre-Instagram, cell phones, like, on the come up. And there was always two things. Don't get a DUI, and never get a fucking, don't, like, if you ever get accused of any sort of rape, it's game over. And I think that what it did to me was, I don't know if it made me, I think it purposely made me very patient. You know what I mean? I never put myself in a situation where, like, if anything, there were probably times where the girl was saying what you mentioned earlier, like, is he gay? Like, why hasn't he made a move yet? It's like, I was super worried about those two things, getting a DUI and ever getting a fucking rape accusation. Because, you know, 20 years ago, rape accusation was much more, it wasn't as common as it is today.
But I mean, I don't know. I mean, I do know a lot of athletes who've had that and have still, you know, we saw that in, like, that Stanford case, right? Who got off the hook. But
yeah.
I find it interesting that you had that much patience, because, you know, I know that in terms of, like, fighting, I can only imagine you with Twitter back then.
Yeah, no.
You were not very patient in one part of your life and that you were able to, like, control yourself in that other side that requires a lot of discipline.
Well, but the other side was driven by fear of, like, you know, it was almost this cancellation before the cancel, but it was warranted. I mean, it was very warranted. But yeah, I just think that guys, I find, like, these guys, these kids, these young men, they're lost. And I think that it comes back to what we said earlier about this vulnerability. and asking questions and being open to like talking to a female about things, what you like, what you don't like, you know, is it okay? Is it okay to like this? Like, isn't that a question that you should ask? Like, if you're going to put it out on the table between you and your partner, do you word it that way? Or do you say like, hey, I have this thing that I kind of like, it makes me feel good. Are you comfortable with it? Is that normal? Like, how do you say that?
Well, one, I would suggest not having these conversations in the bedroom. Like, these are conversations that you don't want to have when you're already in the intimate situation.
Yes.
And if you can't talk about sex with the person you're having sex with, that's the first problem.
Right.
I also want to say that, like, when you said all these young guys are lost, I mean, we're humans. We're all lost.
Right.
No, there's not one person on the planet that has all the answers. And if they tell you that they do, they're full of shit.
Right.
Cause we're all like dealing with our own stuff at any given time. It's just more like admitting that, just being like, hey, I'm a little nervous. You mean you could even say like, I'm a little like nervous. I feel awkward having this conversation, but I really like want to have, I really want to be with you and I want to please you. And, and you know, and it doesn't, you know, it doesn't need to be perfect, but for sure do not have it in the bedroom.
Yeah,
for
you're
sure.
Right.
Have it clothed.
Yep. No, that's
preferably
a great
have
point.
It without alcohol,
yep.
You know, the influence of alcohol or drugs. And you know, I think these can be awkward conversations. It's just the more we have them, the more practice we become. A lot of times I'll get questions from women who partners want to have anal sex and they really don't want to, or they're anxious about it. And one of my friends who's on the podcast, Ana de la Reguera, had like the best response, which I thought I love sharing because I think it's interesting how people react. Is she was saying to someone who said, you know, who asked her, she's like, yeah, okay, you know, we can try that, but I want to try it to you first.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Perfect.
I want to try it to you first. And, you know, and then so the person that's doing it understands what it's like to receive it and understands that, you know, okay, like, oh, I'm not just going to jam this in there. So, you know, I'm going to start slow. I'm going to use toys. I'm going to use lube, whatever it is. Like the same, if you're trying out anything new, talking about it, creating the boundaries around it, you know, and also being open to like your partner might not want to try it.
Right. Yeah. Well, think
about
that.
That doesn't mean that you're not normal. Again, as long as there's consent, as long as the person's of age, as long as it doesn't involve a children or an animal.
Yep.
You know, your fantasies are fantasies, you know, and I know people that do all kinds of things and I don't look at them like they're not. They're sickos.
No, but that is a great point. You know, just think about it for a second. And would you want it done to you? It's just think about it for a second. And you know, I think the anal thing is a little bit of a different. It's like, think about that. Do you want that done to you? Like, maybe just be a little bit more understanding. It's part of the process, part of the conversation. Liz, where can everybody find you? Like, where can people ask questions or listen? What are the best spots?
So our podcast, The Sex Ed, which I host, we're on hiatus right now, but we've got a lot of episodes, is on any platform that you listen to podcasts, Spotify, Apple, et cetera. Our website is thesexed.com and we've got all sorts of things on there. We've got essays on every single thing you can imagine. We have a sexpedia, which I'm really excited about, because I get a lot of people asking me to like, well, I don't understand what this word means, or I don't know what this is. So you can look up all sorts of things.
I was reading some of the, there's a lot of articles on a lot of fucking interesting stuff. So
We also have a book, we have a library, and then our Instagram is at the sex ed.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. I told you I like to keep it. We're at 43 minutes. That look how fast that went by. That was quick, right?
Yeah.
I think we should do this again, and I don't want to overload everybody, but I appreciate you.
Yeah, I'll come on anytime.
Okay. All right. Well, it's good to catch up. And
you too.
Thanks again. And obviously, I think you'll probably get some, if you get any real, if any of these fucking guys come in, drop into your inbox and they're just, you'll know.
I don't personally, there's other people like filtering this through.
No, so, I know.
You know. Before it gets to me. So,
well, if, yeah. Anyways, guys, behave yourselves. All right. okay, Liz, thanks again. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Perfect segue. Just a quick little moment to tell you guys about Roman. Okay. Now that the world's opening back up, we got a lot of thrills that are on the horizon, whether you've been in a relationship for years or you're just getting started and you're excited to get back out there and meet new people when the moment comes, you want to be ready. Roman gives you a free online evaluation to talk about your ED. From the comfort and privacy of your home, Roman equals confidence, the confidence that you need to rise up to the occasion in the moment. A U.S. licensed healthcare professional is going to work with you for the best treatment plan. The whole process is straightforward, convenient, discreet. You're going to go to getroman.com/Sean, complete an online visit, take care of your ED, gentlemen, without leaving your home. You complete an online visit today to connect with a U.S. licensed healthcare professional and take care of it. And by the way, if you go to getroman.com/Sean today and you're prescribed, you're going to get 50% off your first month of ED treatment. That's getroman.com/Sean. Episode 85, no gruffs given. It's uncomfortable talking about sex, right? But we need to do it. Because we want to be the best version of us that we can possibly be. We want to be in great relationships, strong, healthy relationships. Because you are your most powerful when you are honest and ask questions. And it's kind of a fucking theme in this whole world that we're living in right now. Wouldn't you say? Honest, open, and asking questions. I'm a Canadian citizen. I hold a U.S. green card. I'm not a registered voter. I'm almost done the process to become an American citizen. I married an American. I pay taxes in America. All right. I have no affiliation to any political party. I know what I like, but everything I say is just my personal opinion. This COVID-19 shit show, by the way, and you guys and girls have been there from the beginning because 85 episodes in. Didn't I start this when COVID started? Or maybe 2 weeks, 2 months before COVID started? Like, this whole journey has been associated with the lockdown and COVID and everything that's gone on. It's still not over. And I got to tell you, I am not afraid to ask questions. And the fucking people that attack others for asking questions, I don't understand them. All right. I don't understand it. Why am I not allowed to ask these questions, especially with a disease or what do we call this? I don't even know. Whatever COVID is, like, I've had it. Okay. My son, who was 3 months old at the time, had it. My wife had it. I currently have strong antibodies. I had my most recent antibody test on, I'll tell you right now, July 27th, I had blood taken from me. And I got the results on July 28th. I have SARS-CoV-2 antibodies. Okay. It's here in the test from Cedars-Sinai. Now, so you can't get a straight answer out of anybody because it's either one thing or the other. There's nothing in between. If you read an article that is science driven, one side will say that's a lie. The other side will say, well, they might think that that's true, or at least, you know, we're looking for the truth. That's what we're looking for. And this whole thing, okay, I just saw, so the Grateful Dead just updated their requirements to go to a concert. So this is what we're living with right now. And whether mandates are coming, and like, what I say to that is, it's not going to affect me, because if I have to go somewhere where I don't have the proper requirements to go there, I don't go. It's like, if there's a party happening that I didn't get invited to, I've never crashed a party. I've never gone to a party uninvited. It's just not my style. So if there's things that I need to do to go somewhere and I want to go there, I'll have to make that decision whether or not I do it or not. And maybe I already have made that decision. But the thing that bothers me is when there's fucking, when the decision doesn't make sense. And now there's a lot of these things that are just trying to appease both sides, but it's not rooted in anything that makes sense. So the Grateful Dead, and Fish just updated theirs too. To go to a show, you either need to show vaccine proof, or if you're not vaccinated, you have to show a negative test. Okay. Here's the problem with that. Vaccinated people, now it's proven, are spreading the virus. You remember a month ago or 6 weeks ago, that wasn't true. Vaccine was the answer to everything, and they took all their masks off and we went back to normal. So you've got two things that are required. If you're unvaccinated, you have to show a negative test. But if you're vaccinated, you just have to show that you're vaccinated. The problem is that both, I guess, both the unvaccinated and the vaccinated can give, spread the virus and receive the virus. The negative test, well, we know that that probably isn't accurate, because the CDC said the PCR tests, they don't recognize the difference between SARS, COVID, and influenza. So you've got all these mandatory requirements to go to a concert now, but none of it fucking makes sense, because there's loopholes in every single thing and contradictions. So you need a negative test, but you're going and getting a PCR test done, which the CDC says now in the last 2 weeks that they don't work. Or you need to be vaccinated, but we also know now that the vaccine doesn't stop people from receiving or giving COVID-19. So the fucking madness. The madness of just trying to appease all these people, instead of, why can't we just fucking all agree on one thing? That is the science, which has been totally convoluted. And I want to play this video that went viral this week, because I say, when I saw this video, I said to myself, this doctor sounds like a lot of the things this doctor's saying sounds like it could be real. Like, this guy really had his shit together. All right. So here, I'm going to play this video. Okay. And so what I was saying, this doctor gets up here. All right. It's a 6.5 minute video. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a scientist. I'm a human being. I've had COVID. You know, I'm allowed to watch something, this video, from a doctor who looks wildly prepared, okay? He doesn't skip a beat in this 6.5 minute presentation. I'm allowed to ask whether or not what he's saying is true. What happens is, some people will watch this video and they'll attack the original person that posted it. So they'll try and discredit this video because of whoever the original person was that posted the video. Or they'll say, this guy's not the right type of doctor. So immediately they go, he couldn't know what he's talking about because he's not the right type of doctor. That's like saying, you know what, to me, that I don't know anything. I have no idea what it's like to play in a game 7 in football. Well, I have a pretty good idea. Like, outside of the football part, I know what it's like to play in a game 7 in a major professional sport playoff environment. So you see what I'm saying? Like, I, and maybe that wasn't the best analogy, but I'm trying to use analogies that are as crazy as some of the shit that people are fighting over. Like, this guy's a doctor. He's much smarter than any of us that aren't doctors when it comes to doctor shit. But I got to tell you, this guy sounds very professional and very buttoned up. And I'm allowed to ask questions based off this video. The problem is you can't get any fucking clarity from anyone because it's either one side or the other, and it's either right or it's wrong. And I thought with science, it wasn't supposed to be that way.
To address your comment, gee, it's hard to believe we're 18 months into this and still having a problem. And I would suggest the reason we still have a problem is because we're doing things that are not useful. And we're getting our sources of information from the Indiana State Board of Health and the CDC, who actually don't bother to read science before they do this. I'm actually a functional family medicine physician. That means I am specially trained in immunology and inflammation regulation. And everything being recommended by the CDC and the State Board of Health is actually contrary to all the rules of science. So things you should know about coronavirus and all other respiratory viruses, they are spread by aerosol particles, which are small enough to go through every mask. By the way, the literature that supports all of that is in a flash drive that we presented to you. It's been given to the secretary. As a matter of fact, it quotes at least three studies sponsored by the NIH to that exact fact, even though the CDC and the NIH have chosen to ignore the very science that they paid to have done. That is why you keep struggling with this, is because you cannot make these viruses go away. The natural history of all respiratory viruses is that they circulate all year long, waiting for the immune system to get sick through the winter or become deranged, as has happened recently with these vaccines, and then they cause symptomatic disease. Because they cannot be filtered out and they have animal reservoirs, and this is a very important point, no one can make this virus go away. The CDC has managed to convince everybody that we can handle this like we did smallpox, where we could make a virus go away. Smallpox had no animal reservoirs. The only thing it learned to infect was humans. That's why we were able to make that virus go away. That will not happen with this any more than it will with influenza, the common cold, respiratory syncytial virus, adenoviral respiratory syndromes, or anything else that has animal reservoirs. So the reason you can't do this is because you're trying to do something which has already been tried and can't be done. Equally important is that vaccination changes none of this, especially with this vaccine. And I would hope this board would start asking itself, before it considers taking the advice of the CDC, the NIH, and the State Board of Health, why we are doing things about this that we didn't do for the common cold, influenza, or respiratory syncytial virus. And then ask yourself, why is a vaccine that is supposedly so effective having a breakout in the middle of the summer when respiratory viral syndromes don't do that? And to help you understand that, you need to know the condition that is called antibody-mediated viral enhancement. That is a condition done when vaccines work wrong, as they did in every coronavirus study done in animals on coronaviruses after the SARS outbreak, and done in respiratory syncytial virus, where a vaccine used in a vulnerable individual done the wrong way, which cannot be done right for a respiratory virus, which has a very low pathogenicity rate, causes the immune system to actually fight the virus wrong and let the virus become worse than it would with native infection. And that is why you are seeing an outbreak right now. In fact, in that flash drive you're going to have coming to you and in the emails with Six Extra, will be a study showing that 75% of people who had COVID-19 positive symptom cases in Barnstable, Massachusetts outbreak were fully vaccinated. Therefore, there is no reason for treating any person vaccinated any differently than any person unvaccinated. You should also know that no vaccine, even the ones I support and would give to myself and my children, ever stops infection. In 2014, there was outbreak of mumps in the National Hockey League. The only people who came down the symptoms were the people who were unvaccinated or unknown vaccine status. Boy, that sounds like a great argument for vaccines. But a question that you should ask yourself, knowing that half of the people who came down with symptomatic disease had no contact with an unvaccinated or unknown vaccine status individual, where did they get the disease? And the answer was from the vaccinated individuals. No vaccine prevents you from getting infection. You get infected, you shed pathogen. This is especially true of viral respiratory pathogens. You just don't get symptomatic from it. So you cannot stop spread. You cannot make these numbers that you've planned on get better by doing any of the things you're doing. because that is the nature of viral respiratory pathogens. And you can't prevent it with a vaccine because they don't do the very thing you're wanting them to do. And you will be chasing this the remainder of your life until you recognize that the Center for Disease Control and the Indiana State Board of Health are giving you very bad scientific guidance. And instead, read the articles that are going to come on the email and are on this flash drive, and listen to the people in this audience here tonight who actually have recognized the advice they are getting from the CDC and the NIH is counterfactual. And that's why you're still fighting this with this vaccine that supposedly was going to make all of this go away, but has suddenly managed to make an outbreak of COVID-19 develop in the middle of the summer when vitamin D levels are at their highest. By the way, the other thing that would be necessary, any vaccine restriction to be considered, is if there were no other treatment available. And I can tell you, having treated over 15 COVID-19 patients, that between active loading with vitamin D, ivermectin, and zinc, that there is not a single person who has come anywhere near the hospital. And we already have studies that show that if you achieve a 25 hydroxy vitamin D level greater than 55, your risk of COVID-19 death will drop down to 1/4 of the population average for the United States. And there are active treatment trials included on that flash drive that show the same is true. So if you were going to discriminate based upon vaccine, you should also discriminate based upon 25 hydroxy vitamin D level, zinc taste test response, and probably previous infection, since there are also studies on that flash drive that show that people who have recovered from COVID-19 infection actually get no benefit from vaccination at all, no reduction in symptoms, no reduction in hospitalization, and suffer 2 to 4 times the rate of side effects if they are subsequently vaccinated. Therefore, the policies that you are basing on are totally counterfactual. I don't blame this board for that, because I know you aren't scientists and you've thought it was reasonable to listen to the CDC, NIH, and the Indiana State Board of Health. But I would encourage that instead you listen to the people out here in this audience and read what's on that data drive. And if anybody here in this board has any questions about anything on that, I will happily come back and sit with you individually if you would like to explain the science behind this. And if you're worried about being sued by somebody because you don't follow the guidance of the CDC and the NIH, I will tell you, have a free pro bono expert testimony at your disposal. I will testify in defense of this board turning down all these recommendations for free at any time in any court. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Episode 85, no gruffs given. So what do you think? I mean, sounds like there's some questions that I'd like to ask based off that presentation. Does that make me a conspiracy theorist? Does that make me a nut job Trumper? Because I want to ask some questions about my health and my family's health. And I want to hear it from an actual person, not from regurgitated shit on social media that was written by who knows, God knows who. And because of what happens, when this doctor at the end says, you know, if you're worried about being sued, what I can tell you is you'll have my expert services free of charge. I immediately go, because this is what I hear the crazy saying. He's not an expert. He's not a epidemiologist. That's so he's completely discredited. He's a fucking working doctor. He had to get a degree to become a doctor, which means he has to know somewhat something about science. I mean, unless I'm wrong and you can become a doctor without knowing anything about science. So do you see where we're, what fucking vortex we're living in right now? And every time I turn this microphone on, I have to be concerned about how I say all of this stuff, because you know, I want to work in an industry that if you say the wrong thing, you're fucking blacklisted. The entertainment industry. By the way, shout out to Gina Carano, who they just announced her next film project. She's producing and starring in a movie. You know, although I will say, and I was thinking about it earlier, why do people put themselves in situations like social media? And this goaltending coach for the Maple Leafs, he got hired and then he got fired, right? And part of the reason that he got hired and fired was because the mob went in and they found old tweets that he liked. I can't tell you why he did or why he didn't like some of these tweets. All right. One of the tweets that he liked, a girl, Nicole Arbour, tweeted, "So chicks with dicks can compete in the Olympics as women, but smoke a bit of giggle weed and it's an uproar." So he liked that tweet. So that was one of the tweets that, so does that make him transphobic? Because if you look at the tweet, I'm not even going to get into this, but like the tweet doesn't, the tweet in on its face, it's not, Nicole Arbour isn't saying, she just says, so chicks, she makes a statement. "So chicks with dicks can compete in the Olympics as women, but smoke a bit of giggle weed and it's an uproar." I mean, anyways, the fucking point is that no one's safe. No one is safe right now. And I'm all for accountability. I am all for accountability. But we got to get some good mojo back and some good vibes back. We got to fucking immediately stop trying to kill each other. Like, I like competition. I want to be surrounded. I want to be in a world where everybody's firing on all cylinders and it's like, it's a race and we got to push ourselves because that'll get the best out of each other. I didn't even see this story, but I saw this kid, this Montreal Canadian player that got drafted. I believe his name is Logan Mailloux. All right. So apparently, this is true. The kid was fined in Sweden. He was fined $1,600 for sharing a non-consensual intimate image of a young woman he took, a photo of a young woman he took while the two were engaging in a sexual act. Okay. So just flat out fucking, first of all, stupid and terrible. Like, so Logan Mailloux, like, I, what the fuck were you thinking, kid? Okay. You can't do that. And it goes to back to the conversation that I had with Liz. Like, gentlemen, we have a responsibility. Okay. We have to fucking protect the women in our lives, and we can be old fashioned and chivalrous and embrace that role. You can't do things like that. So fast forward, the kid asks, basically goes on the record and says, "I don't want to be eligible for the draft. I have too much work to do on myself." It's a pretty fucking unbelievable thing for the kid to do. Rightly so. I mean, if you look at it and go, yeah, you know what? That was the right move. You should have said that, Logan. I commend you for that decision. I mean, honestly, I think he probably should have done a little jail time. But the rules are different everywhere, state by state, country by country. I think this was in Sweden. So he didn't go to jail. He had to pay a fine. I'll go on the record and say that if you do that, I think you should do a little jail time. But he didn't, okay? So he paid his debt to society, whatever was requested of him by a court of law. He comes back, he says, you know what? I don't want to be drafted this year. I'm not ready. He ends up getting drafted by the Montreal Canadiens. And now he has to, all these fucking heroes like Michael Farber at Sports Illustrated and Emily Kaplan, I don't know who she works for, but they hold this kid over the coals. So it's partly his fault, but it's also the Montreal Canadiens' fault because Montreal went ahead and drafted him. So Montreal drafts him and then the owner releases a statement. And, you know, they try and save face because that's the world we're living in now. Anytime you fuck up, you have to send a mea culpa out and you got to try and beg for forgiveness. Instead of just owning it, you made the decision. Don't try and backpedal in a ridiculous way. So now what they're doing is they're not inviting the kid to training camp this year or rookie camp, which is fine. But you know what you should have said? You should have said that the moment you drafted him. You should have went on the record with everyone and done it right away, because that probably would have been the smart thing to do. The kid tried to personally opt out of the draft. Montreal goes ahead and drafts him. Montreal should have said, you know what? Right afterwards, We respect Logan's decision. And part of the reason why we were comfortable in making our own decision in drafting him was to see that he was already doing the things that he needed to do to become a better man. Instead of this one strike, your life is over. I mean, he did something bad, right? Did he kill someone? No, he didn't kill someone. But do you see what I'm saying? And even that comment right there could get me in trouble, right? Somebody could spin it any way that they wanted to. And like, but fuck me. We don't like, there's such thing as second chances. Because on the other side, they'll say, well, nobody even has to go to jail anymore. People don't even want police. The same people that would try and cancel me for what I just did, which was just try and make sense of this whole thing. It's this fucking vicious cycle that we're living in. So here's what I'm telling you, okay? Here's what I'm going to do. I'm just minding my own fucking business. I'm living my life. I'm asking the questions that I need to ask to take care of my family. I'm going to work as hard as I can when given any opportunity. And I'm not going to give a fuck about all you other crazies out there that are just angry and trying to fight and hurt people. Instead of all of us just getting back on track here and fucking firing on all cylinders and having great weekends, you know, having stuff to look forward to, being able to focus at work because, you know what? I want to save up for this trip. I want to take my family to Disneyland. I want to go away with the boys in March. We have none of that now, and it is killing society. That is a fucking fact. Episode 85, No Gruffs Given. HelloFresh. If you're on the Look Good, Feel Good program and you want to stay on the Look Good, Feel Good program, I'm giving you an opportunity to dial it in. As we get back into a routine, a self-imposed routine, because we can't rely on anyone else's routines, right? Summer's almost over. We're going into winter hibernation. That's the time when you ultimately should be getting ready for the upcoming summer. So you can go to HelloFresh.com/14Sean and use the code 14Sean for 14 free meals plus free shipping right off the bat. Now, if you don't know what HelloFresh is, it's America's number one meal kit. It's a grocery store that helps you basically make dinner, lunch, breakfast, whatever you need. Sends the ingredients to you, gives you directions on how to cook. It's super easy to use, but it gets you dialed in and firing on all cylinders. And that's what we want. So I'm giving you 14 free meals. It's pretty good. You got to go to HelloFresh.com/14Sean. Use the code 14Sean. Episode 85, No Gruffs Given. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm just trying to keep up. You know, I've told you before, every single week, I come to a moment where I think, should I stop doing this? Should I stop doing this? Is this hurting me? I'm not afraid of anything, okay? Except not being able to control my own destiny, right? Not being able to, if somebody, you know, that's the problem with social media now is like, I want to have these conversations across from somebody. I love debating. And we've just taken all the aspects of debate and fucking thrown them in an incinerator and lit that on fire. Now, I will tell you that, you know, you got to help the cause. You got to like, subscribe, share. If some of these products pique your interest, which by the way, one that definitely should is goodlifeclothing.com. Promo code Sean, 20% off. I just got a box in the mail. I just got their new overdyed black t-shirt. basically they over diet. So it's super black. Nice, buttery, crispy cotton. I've been wearing, washing the shirts, and I iron all my t-shirts. You guys know that, right? I iron all of my t-shirts. I can iron a t-shirt in probably 45 seconds. That t-shirt is crispy, looks new. When I pull it out to put it on, I fucking feel good because I look good. So Good Life's new overdyed black t-shirt, money. Goodlifeclothing.com. Use the promo code Sean. They've got everything you need. So yeah, if you do like some of these products and you buy them, that helps me. The thing that I feel the most and that I get the most personal enjoyment out of is my cameos. And you guys have not been letting me down. You're pulling through, but you got to keep booking cameos. You just have to. And you got to remember, you get something tangible back. You get a video where if you do your job and I do my job, we've got laughter. We've got fucking good times, fun times, foot on the gas, heavy and hot. We're getting after it. You know, we're having some fucking fun because that's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to work hard, play hard, love, fight, and everything in between. Episode 85, No Gruffs Given. I want you to listen to this song.
Till the morning came around. I said I'll run it, but I take my time. A friend of the devil is a friend of mine. If I get home before daylight, just might get some sleep tonight. Ran into the devil, he loaned me 20 bills. Spent the night in Utah in a cave up in the hills. Said I'm running, but I take my time. A friend of the devil is a friend of mine. If I get home before daylight, just might get some sleep tonight. Yeah, well, I ran down to the levee, but the devil caught me there. Took my $20 bill and he vanished in the air. Said I'm running, but I take my time. A friend of the devil is a friend of mine. If I get home before daylight, just might get some sleep tonight. Why I cry, wait each lonely night. The first one's named Sweet Emery, she's my heart's delight. The second one is Prison Baby, sheriff's on my trail. And if he catches up to me, I'll spend my life in jail. Chino, baby, and one in Cherokee. And the first one says she got my child, but it don't look like me. Said I'm running, but I take my time. A friend of the devil is a friend of mine. If I get home before daylight, I just might get some sleep tonight. Thank you. a friend of mine. If I get home before daylight, just might get some sleep tonight.